Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, Horn listeners, it's Dedication Tuesday on the Horn. Got dedications coming tonight. We've got one going out. Let's start the show this evening with a dedication to... Well, it's a long-distance dedication, and it just says to Tippy... From Benny, right here on the Horn.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, live and let live. But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say live and let die.
So call in on the request line, 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON.
And bring in your requests for murder music. Good God. No let up. No let up at all. the Israelis mortared the United Nations school in northern Gaza today. 30 people were killed, 55 were wounded. Most of the casualties were outside the school in the Jabalia refugee camp. Palestinian sources said 44 were killed. I had hoped to share something with you. I had it saved all day long. Some of the photographs that aren't supposed to be getting out of the genocide zone, I found them on Facebook last night. And I found them right before bed. And my sleep was not untroubled. More little Hamas rocketeers, 3 and 4 years old, burned and blown to pieces by a live and let die policy. And they trouble my sleep. I'm sure they trouble yours. So I don't know if you can find it or not. What you'll be looking for on Facebook is the profile of an individual named Tarneem, T-A-R-N-E-E-M-S, Alagha. If I can get this link to work, I will eventually get it into the chat room and hopefully get it up onto the boards. Get it onto the headonradionetwork.com main site. It's one of those things that you sort of have to see to believe or to comprehend. Let me see if I can get this thing to load. Nope. See, that's what I was afraid of. There were links to the real-world butchery going on in Gaza. And they were graphic. And they were frightening. And they were scream-inducing. Burned-up babies have a way of doing that. And they're gone. They're gone. They've been disappeared. The murder isn't happening. It's just not there. And you can, well, I guess you have to just take it on faith that they're trying not to kill too many civilians. Just a few here and there. They don't mean to kill little babies and burn them up. But let me throw a radical idea at you. And I admit that this is truly radical. And it is certainly something that the United States does not comprehend. You do, but we don't as a nation. We don't as a government. But just for your consideration, and you can tell me what you think. Those who would have peace must practice peace. And I say that to both sides. It is a shame that we do not at present have a foreign policy that says that. I don't know if it's possible for us to have a foreign policy that says that, because for all our talk of our Christian nation, we behave like the most brutish of barbarians. I'm sorry I couldn't start out with something funny tonight, but the world just doesn't seem very funny to me right now. But what do you think? Those who would have peace must practice peace. What would be wrong with withdrawing all aid until peace is achieved. And then let the aid be butter and not guns.
Well, that's bad for business, Bob.
Depends on the business you're in, I suppose. But no matter the propaganda, no matter how hard people try, no matter how hard the media ignore what's going on, I won't. An updated piece of information from editorandpublisher.com. Headline, Media Commentary Muted as Israel Invades. New York Times Fails to Editorialize. Editor and publisher writes, Israel launched its much-anticipated invasion of Gaza on Saturday. For over a week, U.S. media had provided largely one-sided coverage of the conflict with little editorializing or commentary arguing against broader Israeli actions. Most notably, after more than 8 days of Israeli bombing and Hamas rocket launching in Gaza, the New York Times had produced exactly one editorial, not a single commentary by any of its columnists, and only two op-eds, one already published elsewhere. The editorial several days ago did argue against the wisdom of a ground invasion, but even though that invasion had become ever more likely all week, the paper did not return to the subject. Amazingly, the paper has kept that silence going in Sunday's and even Monday's paper, with no editorial or columnist comment on the Israeli invasion beyond a hawkish pro-invasion contribution by William Crystal. Hey, look, have we not figured this out yet after 8 long years? If William Crystal is for something, if you've got a shred of decency and morality about you, you'd damned well better be against it. I mean, this is the guy who gets up in the morning. It's one of those, if William Crystal speaks in a forest and no one is listening, is he still wrong? The Washington Post found the invasion justified but highly risky. I know that proposing peace is insane. I know that proposing peace is silly and childish and not nearly as fun as war and watching babies go boom. I know that. Peace is hard work. War is easy. Slaughter is easy. Once you've dehumanized someone, killing them is the easy part. Man, woman, child. The school that got bombed today by the Israelis were in use as shelters for civilians fleeing the rape of Gaza. The UN is quite certain in saying that the buildings were clearly marked with UN flags. The agency had even gone so far as to give the global positioning coordinates of all of its schools to Israeli authorities. The Israelis bombed it anyway. What the heck? I'm so sick of this I could cry. I'm disgusted with it. And yet somehow or another, some way, somewhere, somewho, I maintain this notion that peace is achievable to those who want it. Sadly, Israel does not want peace, and neither does Hamas. Because if either side did, they would stop this foolishness, this idiocy, this madness and mayhem, murder and carnage. Golda Meir once famously said that there will be peace when they love their children more than they hate us. It may be equally so said of Israel. If you want peace, you must practice peace. Kind of let that roll around in your noggin a little bit. All these retaliations, it's always a retaliation. Hamas is retaliating against Israel. Israel's retaliating again. Retaliation, retaliation, retaliation. What is the definition? Or what is the word you use to describe someone or something that does the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result? Isn't that the definition of insanity? Retaliation isn't working. Apparently, the Israelis are as unable to comprehend as George Bush and his thuggish crowd were, that when you do these kinds of things, you create new generations of so-called terrorists. Yeah, they're recruiting posters. Uncle Hamas wants you. And yet it continues to be seen as the only viable alternative. If you would have peace, you must practice peace. You know, I can't get past my raisin. I am a recovering Southern Baptist. I am a recovering fundamentalist. And I can't help watching all of this. You know, I spoke repeatedly about the little burned, beaten 3-year-old lying unconscious in her screaming father's arms, the photograph that I saw, which I'm sure was nothing but Hamas propaganda. That child was probably suffering just to make Israel look bad. Probably ran right out in front of that explosive, just like that. Because the 3-year-old hates Israel. But I can't get away from my raising. And I can't help going to this passage. It is from the 10th chapter of the book of Mark. And it is from the 13th verse. Remember, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, was a traveling teacher, a rabbi. And so he would go places and crowds would show up. Or so the book says. Chapter 10, verse 13, and they brought young children to him, that he should touch them. And his disciples rebuked those that brought them. But when Yeshua saw it, he was much displeased, and said unto them, Suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of God. Verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child, he shall not enter therein. And he took them up in his arms, and put his hands upon them, and blessed them. You see, save for the munitions involved, there just wasn't a hell of a lot of difference between the world in which Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer walked and the one in which people walk now in that region. It was a region ripped asunder and torn by constant conflict, by an endless, deep-seated yearning for freedom. The irony being that it was the Jews of that day who were in the role of the Palestinians today. They had been displaced. It was deemed that someone is going to have to always occupy that place. Obviously, they can't govern themselves. And whether it was the Greeks under the generals who came after the Strategons, the Strategoi, who came after Alexander, or whether it was the Romans, or whether it was the Herods. For a time, Herod was allied with Mark Antony and Cleopatra. But he saw which way the wind was blowing and tasted which side of the bread had the olive oil on it, and became a close ally of Rome, as did his dynasty. And Rome set up a protectorate, and things got worse and worse, until eventually Rome had to send in an actual governor, because no one seemed to bring peace to that place that loves not peace. And we may be safe in assuming that wandering Nazareth and the Galilee and going down unto Jerusalem, Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer rabbi saw more than his fair share of suffering. The cross on which he was crucified was not the first cross to be mounted on Golgotha. It was where they took the bad people to put them to death. Bad people like, for instance, a group of Jewish rebels named the Sicarii. They were in the current argo, I suppose you could call them, killer queens. They dressed as women and hid mighty sharp blades under their robes in order to get close enough to a Roman soldier, a tribune, a legionnaire, who knows, and then knife him in the ribs. You and I would recognize that or it would be called in current parlance terrorism, the random instilling of terror through violence. And for every Roman soldier killed, the Romans were wont to kill 10 or 100 of the local population. His was a time when simply being of another neighborhood was enough to keep you from being touched. The story of the Good Samaritan, I'm sorry, we'll end Sunday school in a minute, and it's not even Wednesday, but there has to be some context to this. The story of the Good Samaritan concerns a man who was, and you know, we don't know if this was true, but the thing is, they are compelling stories of the age. The story of the Good Samaritan concerns a man who was robbed and beaten and left for dead by the side of the road. And many good people walked past him and gave him no help and no hope, not even so much as a sip of water as he lay dying. The Samaritan came along, and a Samaritan was untouchable. They were dirty. They were unclean within the religious strictures of the day. And he saw the wounded, suffering man and gave him aid and got him to help. And the story of the Good Samaritan goes down through our culture as a lesson about help desperately needed that comes from unlikely sources. And the vision of children going to this traveling teacher merely to have his touch of blessing upon them, because that touch, it's not that it was going to do anything particularly miraculous, but the touch was the blessing itself, and it resonates throughout the culture of that era and that area, all the way back to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Esau, where the touch of the hand was the imparting of compassion, of goodwill, of blessing. And they brought young children unto him, that he should touch them. And his disciples rebuked those that brought them. Can't you just hear it? You know, if you read it and you pay attention, the disciples are like a bunch of clowns. It's so obvious that Yeshua is so far advanced beyond them in terms of comprehension and understanding that it's the difference between night and day. And you can see a bunch of laughing, smiling, grinning, running, hopping, jumping, little children running up to the guy who is said to be doing such wondrous things. And you can see that, hey, kid, you can see the disciples, can't you? Hey, kid, get away from the boss. Boss, I'm sorry, I got to get this kid out of here. Ah, look, there's more of them. Hey, kids, get away from him, all right? He's got things to do. He's a very important man. Get away. Get out of here, kids. You bother me. And they brought young children to him that he should touch them, and his disciples rebuked those that brought them. Hey, kid, get out of here. You bother me. I hear your mother calling. Go on, get. That's what rebuking them is. But when Yeshua saw it, he was much displeased, and said unto them, namely the disciples, suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of God. You can almost hear the words that aren't there. Kingdom of God, comma, you morons. Suffer the children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of God. Verily verily I say unto you, that's a pretty Elizabethan language. No, really, I'm telling you. Whoever doesn't get the kingdom of God like a little child ain't coming in. Well, you know what? It's safe to say you're not understanding, you're not comprehending the kingdom of God when instead of suffering the little children to come unto you, you are making the little children suffer. It's disheartening and irritating and annoying and maddening. The world over, we talk about the children. Oh, the little children. Save the children. Feed the children. I'm Sally Struthers, and I've eaten several children today. Could you fatten them up for me, please? Children. And they're the first people that we blow the hell away.
Well, you see, there was some collateral damage today, when some bombs fell on a school and killed some children. It was entirely regrettable. We'll try not to do it again. I had the livers with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And he took them up in his arms and put his hands upon them and blessed them. And that's all we have. He took them up in his arms and put his hands on them and blessed them. Living in that world where violence and murder and death was a fact of daily living, just as it is in Gaza today and now, it was all he could do. To lay your hand upon the head of a child and silently pray to an unhearing, unseeing, disinterested God, please, for your own sake, protect these and give them a little bit of pleasure and joy in their existence before the hell that is this earth confronts them for the rest of their days. That's all. You know, there's a reason, again, if there's any truth to any of this, there's a reason that he cries out on the cross, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? It wasn't just at the moment of crucifixion that he felt forsaken. His was a forsaken life. His was a world where it appeared that if there had ever been a God, God had certainly gone along his merry way and left the man and left the place to be managed by demons. And so it is today. And so it is today. And the photos of what are being done to the children there have been disappeared from Facebook for some reason. But I shot a note to the person who posted those photographs, and I made a solemn promise that I would try to call those photographs to people's attention, because they are the same thing, in essence. They're the same thing as, and they draw you the same way that the aftermath of the battlefield near Sharpsburg, Maryland, what the North would go on to call the Battle of Antietam. The way that the gory, grisly business that took place there, wholesale slaughter, cornfields mowed down by rifled musket fire, as though it had been taken with a sickle, and the dead lying and sprawled in the positions in which they breathed their last, the horrible rictus of war painted upon their faces. The same thing that drew Matthew Brady there, who then went back to his studio in New York City and published the photos and displayed them in his studio gallery to the people of New York who were far, far, far away from the fighting, that they might see the horror. So too were these photographs. But for reasons I do not comprehend, they are gone, and I don't know where to send you to see them. And as such, I apologize. And I also try to talk about them. And ask you to consider them. So we'll take a little break. Your calls are welcome, of course, as always. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is The Horn. And we'll be back with your calls.
My bed's on fire. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Email rolling in from our buddy Marty. Subject line, or they say that the enemy hides in or near areas filled with innocents, thereby making them legitimate targets. Oh, Lordy, we've heard it all. Looking for murder music, you say, Bob? Just try about anything from Toby Keith. No talent hack. That again from Marty. So, you know, that's where the beginning of the program begins. We've got other stuff to do. By no means is this a single issue program. But in answer, and I'm going to the phones just in a second. You know, light them up if you want to. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4 head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. I was asking about why those photographs disappeared. Well, lo and behold, our pop culture correspondent, David from Maine, provided me with this during the break. Facebook, which claims its goal is to let users share their lives, has been accused of censoring posts about the fighting in Gaza. So much for Mark Zuckerberg's dreams of breaking down global barriers. Last March, at the SXSW Interactive Web Conference, Zuckerberg spoke at length about how the connections Middle Eastern youth make on Facebook could lead them away from religious extremism. It's a theme he's returned to time and time again. But how Zuckerberg thinks they're going to connect when his site's not even letting them talk isn't clear. Users report that posts are getting deleted, apparently, for even mentioning words like Gaza or Palestine. The Facebook people aren't trolling to get rid of this stuff. Someone else is. The author of this post says, what's really going on? The site's self-policing mechanisms, which allow users to report, quote-unquote,
inappropriate content
seem to be to blame. The flagging system is meant to prevent the posting of porn where minors can see it, but it's being abused at present by people with a political agenda of keeping the carnage in Gaza from being seen by the world. Facebook only has 800 employees overseeing 140 million users. So it's not the employees doing this. You literally at present can't use the word Gaza or Palestine on Facebook without getting it ditched. Toward the end of the post, the author, and this is from a blog called valleywag.gawker.com. Of course, everyone's against censorship until they're for it. And the blogger posts a video underneath. He says, here's something that will likely offend the true believers on both sides of the conflict. The tales of Sar Netanel, a gay Israeli Jerusalem City Council member, and Badi, a Palestinian drag performer who claims Hamas is hounding him out of the country. Well, it's so nice to see both sides can agree on hating someone. Look. It's the gays. And the transgenders and the transsexuals and the bisexuals. Man, if they were only atheists, they'd be the most loathed human beings on earth. But, you know, you've got to have a point. You got to have some point of agreement. Maybe from hating one even weaker group, the Hamas and the Israelis can find peace together. Sort of the way I felt when I saw Rick Warren, fundamentalist that he is, sitting down to break bread with an Islamic group. The fact of the matter is, I care not a whit for organized religion, not any of them. They are all wrong. But when they get their bigotries together and find common ground and somebody they can both hate together, then we're all in trouble because the great debate between less tastes great and less filling finds a target in the normal population. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed.
How's it going?
Just sitting here watching the gore and the death and the destruction and, I don't know, maybe going to whistle a merry tune of What a Wonderful World, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't get the straight of it. All we see is the surface. So you don't know who done what, or I don't. You know, I can't figure it out. I just know that all this killing and stuff is wrong. It sounds like somebody took George Bush's lessons.
Well, this and in many ways, what Israel is doing now is a door that was opened by George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, what's good for the U.S. is good for the world.
Yeah, and we pushed that. And I heard an argument this morning on our local yogels that George Bush wasn't to blame for. Any of this stuff, and everything's going to fall back on George Bush. But I think it hits home. But what's got me going is even CNN is second-guessing Obama, and especially on this newest appointment. And, you know, what it can't be any worse than what happened. You know, they want to blame the CIA and all these other agencies for not giving Bush the right information. Well, can the guy Obama appointed do any worse? I just don't see it. And another thing, all I'm trying to take Obama down. I listened this morning, and these people, if Obama was white, he would have carried West Virginia more than what Hillary Clinton did. But we just had to show our prejudice. But I got some good news for those Republican bastards. If Obama hits the bottom, he ain't going to hit too hard because Cheney, Bush, and what was their coach's name that got out of it?
Oh,
Carl Rove.
Yeah. And, coach. You threw me with coach. Yeah, the Bush's brain, Carl Rove. Sure.
Yeah. And you know they've got the bottom of the barrel covered, so he'll have a soft landing, won't he? But anyway,
federal money is going to pay for the gate in front of his new mansion in Dallas. I just read that today. Your tax dollars at work, Ed.
I can't believe that.
Well, you know me. I wouldn't kid you.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it never quits.
After he leaves office on January 20th, President Bush will be giving up his photo op Crawford Ranch and moving to the affluent Dallas neighborhood known as Preston Hollow. Newsweek noted, or as we'd say around here, holler. Newsweek noted that the Bush family has found a friendly pocket in a Texas county that went for Obama. But Bush isn't taking any chances. He'll be using federal funds to build a security gate around his friendly pocket. This from the Dallas Morning News. Dallas City Manager Mary Soom confirmed on Monday that the younger Bush is seeking to have a gate placed somewhere along the entrance to streets leading to his future Preston Hollow address. So it's not just in front of his house, Ed. He's going to turn an entire neighborhood into an armed camp. Talk about there goes the neighborhood. If you were living in that prestigious neighborhood and all of a sudden, who wants to put up with that? Can I see your license and registration, sir? Well, I just live down the street. Oh, I don't care, sir. The president lives here now. Isn't that just sickening?
Well, it's worse than that. I mean, we've had a damn crazy man in the White House, or to say the least, he's unbalanced. But they talk about all these appointments that, you know, CNN is, what if, you know, they're trying to undermine or second guess one of the best minds that has come along in years, in politics. And it's just really disgusting. Everybody is really down on him and hadn't even given him a chance. And like I said, the guy that he appointed or talking about appointing now to head up the CIA or whatever outfit it is, he can't be any worse than the ones that caused George Bush to sit for 7 minutes after he was told it was being under attack. I don't know what they compare it to. But the Republicans and this going, reaching across the aisle, is sickening to me. That's my biggest fault with Obama. Can he see by these news talk or these talk, so-called news, but these talk show deals where the Republicans has got it, that those people are the same place today that they were on election day? And the reaching across the aisle, all he's going to get is his ends of his fingers knocked off.
Yep.
And I just can't believe a man that smart can make an ignorant move like that.
Well, I tell you what, it's bad enough that, you know, the Republicans feel like they've got the bit in their teeth in the Senate, Ed, and it's as annoying as the day is long. They're telling the world how the Senate's going to operate and who's going to sit and who's not going to sit. I've got that story in the stack. But guess what? It's not just the other side of the aisle. Obama's got problems. You know, what did Will Rogers say, Ed? I do not belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat.
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
Is that McCullen or whatever his name is from Pennsylvania? He's rearing back acting like that they're in a driver's seat.
Well, what I was saying, though, is he's got Democrat problems.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, Dianne Feinstein and John Rockefeller, you know, our senator, both are acting like they bowed and scraped and kissed George Bush's little toe.
Yeah.
But Dianne Feinstein was outraged that she wasn't consulted before Leon Panetta was named to be the incoming CIA boss.
Well, he can't be any worse than what we've had. because, well, or at least Bush blamed it on them, that that's the reason that more action wasn't taken. But we know that's a lie, too.
Well, the compare these votes, okay? You remember Tom Ridge, the guy that told people to go out and buy duct tape and plastic sheeting?
Mm-hmm, right.
Well, when he was confirmed before the Senate, Feinstein didn't show up to vote, and, of course, Jay Rockefeller voted yay. Then there was Michael Chertoff. Michael Chertoff at Homeland Security, Feinstein voted yay, and Rockefeller voted yay. Condoleezza Rice, yay and yay, Feinstein and Rockefeller. No objection to Donald Rumsfeld. Michael Hayden, CIA director, yay, and Rockefeller missed the vote. And finally, on Porter Goss and Michael Mukasey, Feinstein voted yay on both, and Rockefeller voted nay.
Well, how are we going to get rid of Rockefeller? And I don't even like Nick Joe Rahal anymore. You know, we just, Rockefeller's true colors are showing up now.
Well, Rockefeller sold out domestic spying. He sold out he sold out habeas corpus. And he's got the gall to say, and they've got the gall to say that they've got qualification issues about Leon Panetta at CIA.
Hmm. Well, you know,
I mean, bear in mind, whoever runs the CIA is going to be involved in some dirty business somewhere along the way.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it is a dirty business in and of itself.
Yeah.
We can argue the necessity of it. I don't mean you and me, but you know, you can have a discussion about the necessity of it. And intelligence and that kind of stuff.
Well, it goes back to who was it? The Wilsons, that his wife was exposed.
Yeah, Valerie Plame.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That shows you what, you know, just what they are. That goes right back to them. And we know that covert action is a commonplace thing. It used to be kind of quiet, you know, up till about, oh, I'd say 20 years ago, but we know what we're involved in. We're one of the dirtiest, filthiest nations there is. And then they get on these other shows and they'll argue how high rated we are with the other countries. And I've got a nephew that lives in England, and I just got a packet from him, and he asked me what was wrong with the people in the United States. That they would put people in like George Bush and Dick Cheney. And here the other people are, oh, our nation's still this, it's that, it's the greatest, you know. They're full of crap up to their ears.
Well, they're not paying attention.
Yeah, well, they're going to deny, they're Republicans. They're going to deny it and lie about it, you know, that we are. But the only people, and I've said it before, the only people that has any use for us is that we're feeding them their breakfast and their supper. That's the only, they're bought and paid for, in other words. So, we live in a fool's paradise. That's my opinion of it. To take down Obama before he hasn't even made the appointment yet. And then to talk him down and, run
but,
your mouth.
Right, but they're taking their talking points from people like Rockefeller. Somebody asked Rockefeller's office about the potential appointment of Leon Panetta, and through a spokesman, Rockefeller said he was puzzled by the selection.
Well, I don't think it takes much to puzzle him. I confronted him when the plant closed down up here. The Pritchard brothers, they own about 44 major corporations, does business with his bank in Chicago, and according to him, he couldn't do nothing about it. And you know that if he does all their banking business, that he could have done something about that plant closure. At least got in and made an effort.
Yeah.
But I want to talk to you about something else and hope some West Virginians are listening. I called Bird's office today, well, three or four of us did. This Billy Wayne Bailey has put in, and I know who's behind it, is Joe Manchin, because old Billy Wayne Bailey went along with about everything that, and I hate to talk where a lot of people don't have an interest in this, but to the West Virginians that are listening, I hope that they will call Byrd's office, because he's the one that makes the recommendation to Obama. And this Billy Wayne Bailey has put in for a marshal's job, which is $92,000 a year. And he has been connected with Graham, the one that went to prison over money problems. And he is using out of the senior citizens' money. He did that to put a roof on his building. And I've got a list of stuff in there that he has done. And he rented the building he owned to himself, and he also does the cooking for the senior citizens. So you're talking about a slime ball, and people need to call Senator Byrd's office and tell him, you know, don't submit that name to the you know, to the president.
So what, does he want to be the U.S. Marshal for the Southern District of West Virginia or something?
No, I don't know how wide it is, but we don't want him in nothing. I mean, he's done enough already. And he's hired his wife as, I forget what she does now. I need to be more, I need more facts, or I needed to write it down what she does. He's got her hired, in some job. I forgot what it was, Bob, and I'm sorry about that. But you can see all the ties and the corruption that is associated with this guy, and he's from Wyoming County. But he is one piece of crap. And
you ever met him?
Huh?
You ever met him?
Yeah, I met him over to get together where Ray Hall and Rockefeller was. He was there. Now, not to shake hands with him, because I'd do him just like I did Shirley Love. I wouldn't shake hands with it. I'd rather put it down in the commode after I used it. But he's the same category, or maybe worse. And I didn't go far enough to shake hands with him, but he was pointed out to me, and a couple guys explained to me what he was then. And I found out a lot more about him since then. So you can bet that he's a crumb ball or scum ball. So
yeah.
I just wanted to call in and express some views.
Sure.
I still say if Obama would have been a white man, he would have got more votes than what Hillary Clinton did.
I think there's every possibility of that in the world. I mean, especially, well, you're talking about within West Virginia, and I don't think there's any getting around that.
Yeah. Well, that shows you the state of ignorance we're in. And as I told you before on the show, I called in after some of them kept running their mouth about them being proud of West Virginia for the way they voted for McCain. I told them some people's pride was, some people's pride was other people's shame. And I still stand on that. I'd have rather seen a John Kennedy run, but he's not here.
Nope.
But
it's like what we used to say. We don't get a pony.
Yeah, I think we got the best, probably the best of the bunch, and I'm content with that. I just wish they would leave him alone. Look at the guy's face. You can see the circles under his eyes from the stress that he's had already. It's catching up with him. And give him a chance and try to encourage him, because I really, in my gut, he's got the right thing at mind. He has no, I don't read any corruption in my discernment of him. I don't see anything.
Well, that's that just means the Republicans aren't trying hard enough. They're trying to, you know, I mean, you're following this stuff, Ed. They're trying to tar him with Rod Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois.
Right.
You know, guilt by association. And frankly, this whole issue over this over who's going to sit in the Senate is frankly sickening to me.
Yeah. And it's caused them not to go ahead and put Al Franklin in too today. That because if they put him in with the dispute going on, then it would have looked like, you know.
Well, but see, John Cornyn, the senator, the Republican senator from Texas, had already told Harry Reid not to do that, and Harry Reid does as he's told, even if it's a Republican telling him what to do.
Oh, I know he's a spineless jerk. You know what? All we did was change names. They've got just a lower rating as what the Republicans had.
Well, if they'll get out there and do the people's business, their rating will go up.
Mm-hmm.
But if they lay there and walla like they have for the last 2 years, they might not get to be in the majority the next time through. There's a lot of people out there that are very serious about seeing positive change come to America, and there's a lot of people, and you know, a lot of them are Democrats. Okay, not just independents or whatever, who are saying, you know, we'll get rid of you until we get somebody that will do the work.
And that should be the attitude. That is mine. You know, you know how I felt about Nancy Pelosi when she went in. I thought, boy, things will pop now. She's a joke, and
pop goes the weasel.
Yeah, and Harry, he is a reflection of weakness. And then that one from, I think he's from Pennsylvania, that guy even has got the looks of stupidity. And to get on there and try to take credit for anything that's going to happen, you know, projecting what's going to happen, and him being behind it. Oh, boy. I tell you, Bob, we're in a heck of a situation. And we got goofballs like that don't even know south from west. So, but what about the what about this deal where what's his name, Boris or whatever his name was?
Burris,
Burris or whatever. What are they going to do about that? Do you reckon?
I don't know. But I've, like I said, I've got that for. We'll probably go into it here in just a little bit, but. Well, I will take a run at that here in a few. But the bottom line is that I haven't seen anything to suggest that Burris has been a part of Blagojevich's corruption. He's just being painted or he's getting smeared by the mud coming off of. And this is not a defense of Blagojevich. I don't know. The man hasn't been tried. The man hasn't been charged. You know, he's been charged with something. But he hasn't had a trial. He hasn't had a jury. So I don't know. He may be as corrupt as the day is long. We'll wait and let a jury of 12 tried and true determine that issue.
Yeah, but I.
But it doesn't seem to extend to Mr. Burris.
No, and I agree. I think he is he seems to be a pretty honorable man, and he's got no track record of being corrupt. But I can't figure out why. You know, whatever that is, what it was, the lieutenant governor, whoever he is, had to sign that thing off with the governor. Well, you know, if it says that the governor shall appoint, and it wasn't ambiguous language, it said shall.
Yeah, it's not a maybe kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering how the other guy got around not having to sign that too, or why he had to. But I don't know, man. It's a mess. And then, of course, Congress might have had to, or the Senate might have had to do what they had to do today. I don't know, but it certainly seems like seems like the more we try to do, the worse the mess gets. But I'll get off here and let somebody else have the line, and maybe some of them can contribute something that'll help my head.
All right, Ed, you have yourself a good night. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, thank you for your time.
All right, I'll put you back on hold.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh. It's our good buddy Ed here in Fayette County. And, well, let's see. Let's just keep it rolling and see what's going on.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, hey, Juanita.
I really enjoy listening to Ed.
Ed's
so down to earth, and he tells it like it is. And he's smart. I don't care what he thinks. He's smart.
Well, Ed sandbags a little, I think.
Huh?
I said Ed sandbags a little, I think.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't like to broadcast his intelligence, but he has sure got it in a bucket full.
But I do. I really enjoy hearing him. You know, it's just, you know, I love that kind of political talk and all. Because, you know, in the South, we're so deprived most of the time of it.
I know, and it's nice to hear plain talk when it just straight up, straight, sure.
And it's, you know, what's right is right. I saw some of that I had to leave, but I saw some of that Senate thing because they were talking about yesterday they were going to swear in Franken, and I thought, well, I didn't hear him say his name. So then Harry Reid did get up and say that the reason they didn't seat Burris was he came without credentials, which he said that I guess it's the lieutenant governor was supposed to sign him and certify him.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was there. And when they were calling, after they were sworn in, you know, by you know who.
Yeah.
The darkness.
Yes.
The lady that, I don't know what you call him, the secretary or whatever, she started calling roll call, and she called Burris's name. And somebody said something to her about, you know, he hadn't been sworn in. And she said, I know that, but he has to be in here. And so they had to find him and bring him in, you know, to the thing. I don't know if you saw that or not, but. And I don't know what it was about, but Harry Reid, that's what Harry Reid said. And then he said about Franken that, you know, that there were people in there that were going to object. And I think that was what was on when I was had to leave. I had an appointment. I had to leave. And I think that guy that Ed is so crazy about, the one that looks like, you know, there's a bunch of them that look alike to me. They look like they're all brothers. Karl Rove.
Yeah.
Ken Starr.
Those two.
And the McCullough, what's his name, McCullough guy? The one that his wife is the...
Oh, McConnell?
The labor.
Yeah, McConnell.
Yeah, McConnell.
Yeah, that's chinless Mitch McConnell.
But don't they look alike? Don't you think they all look alike? They got that...
pinched up kind of weasel. Yeah, they got that pinched up kind of weaselly thing going for them.
Yeah.
What did they used to call Frank Burns on MASH? Ferret face.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. They're
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, they're ferret faces.
I hadn't thought about that. But anyway, I like Al Franken. I started listening to him on Air America, you know, when Air America first started. Air America is not what it used to be at all. They don't even have a morning show now. They got rid of all the younger people, basically. And, you know, most of the younger people that started on there, you know, they might not have been smooth, but they were well-informed. And they put what's her name? Rachel Maddow. Yeah. They put her all over the place. In fact, her first show that she had on, she was with some other people, and they canceled that show. And she didn't know she was going to go back to where she came from and do a little radio show of her home. And then they put her in the morning, and then, you know, early in the morning, and then they put her there and there and everywhere. And then they finally put her in the evening. So she's basically the only one that I can think of that they left. But I really enjoyed all of that, and it was, you know, it was all I knew to listen to, you know, except for Radio Left, and it was only on once a week.
Right.
And for like 2 or 3 hours. But anyhow, I came to appreciate Al Franken. You know, a lot of people put him down.
I could listen to his show. It was all right. He, you know, the fact of the matter is, I'm just a little bit more liberal. I'm a little bit more progressive than he is. But he's things like the Iraq War. He was slow to come around and just say it was wrong. And
what he said that he at first he believed Colin Powell.
Yeah.
He has such respect for him. And then after he got over that, he said that he thought that they couldn't just leave right away. And, of course, I think later on he changed. But, you know, he went over there and entertained over there a number of times in Christmas. You know, they were there.
Yeah, he did. He put his money where his mouth was where that was concerned.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he was very, very hesitant to say anything about the dummied up bogus electric voting machines.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember that.
But he's learned that lesson the hard way, and I don't think
that he just was naive about that. You know, it's, you know, so many of us in America are. We're not cynical enough to understand that they're underhanded.
But the woman that he had on there as a sidekick early on, she was fabulous, and she worked really well with him.
Yeah, she was experienced, and she taught him a lot.
Yeah.
But what I liked about him was his knowledge of politics. And, you know, his hero was the one that got killed.
Yeah, Wellstone.
Yeah. And he wasn't born in Minnesota. He was raised in Minnesota.
Right.
I think he was born in New York City, but he was raised in Minnesota until he, you know, he went to Harvard and then he went, got in show business. But I think he would be a great senator. I think he'd really fight for people. He would tell about his wife, about their dad died when she was a baby, I believe, and how the mother couldn't have gotten by without Social Security. And she was able to go to school and get a degree, you know, and he's really all for that. So anyway, I'm just saying what I think, but the thing about that, they're just, I don't know why they picked on the ones that were, now he didn't have anything to worry about, but they picked on the ones that were the most popular, it seemed to me, and got rid of them. And look how they did Mike Malloy. Gosh.
Sure.
The man was on his way to work.
I know. That,
and I remember that he was going to interview Gore Vidal. He was going to be on that day, and they were on their way to work.
And got treated that
way. He'd just been told a day or two before that he was going to be renewed. And he was on his way to work, and they said, don't come in. I mean, it's crazy. But I don't know what it is. It's like, I don't know if they're blue dogs or what. I mean, I listen to a lot of them a lot of times. You know, I still do, but I don't. It's not anything like it was.
Right.
And of course,
right.
I've got a lot more choices now, but anyway, that's my little 2 cents worth about that.
Sure.
But I wanted to say something about Burrell. I listened to him talk, and I listened to him on a where he was being interviewed the other day, and they asked him about the money. Hadn't he given money to the governor? And he said yes, and they said, didn't you give about $14,000? He said, was it that much? But anyway, they're putting him down for having like a mausoleum.
Yeah, I saw that. That's
It's a little ostentatious.
Well, but then again,
if I had the money laying around, I'd build myself a pyramid, okay? I would.
You would?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Just that ostentatious. But
at least a decent obelisk, you know.
A lot of black people, especially their funerals, you know, is very special. Like the older ones that I know, it had place to bury.
Yeah, it's got his name and it's got his accomplishments, yeah. A little bench to sit and think, and the big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
that's not a reason to deny the man a seat in the Senate.
Right. Yeah.
Now, if you can prove a link between money and him and Blagojevich, don't seat him.
Yeah, I think that's what they're saying. They're checking.
But the fact of the matter is, not just Blagojevich, the governor of the state of Illinois has a statutory duty to fill vacancies in federal offices pending the next election. And, you know, it's kind of a rock and a hard place, and it doesn't make us look good. You know, it's one of those things where we've played right into the hands of the right wing, and it's frustrating as it can be. But I don't know. We'll just have to watch it pan out. All I know out of this is it doesn't feel good, and I think it looks worse.
Well, I read a little snippet about Jeb saying he thought it was the wrong time for him to run for senator.
Well, you know, I saw where Pappy Bush said, said, I don't think America's ready for another Bush right now, but I sure would like to see Jebby in the White House.
Yeah. I said something about that to Guy James there all back, and he said about him, they said he's going to run. That's why, one of our senators, you know, is retiring to be with his family.
Yeah, got to spend more time with his family.
Anyway, Guy said, go away, Chad. Go away, Bushes. Go away. I said, Lord, yes, please.
Well, I mean, there's, you know, a long time ago, there was a phrase, you know, if you'd put in a hard day's work, you'd sit down and say, phew, I'm bushed. You know what?
Yep.
America and the world, one is,
right,
bushed.
Well, I said I've been bushwhacked. I said that from almost the beginning. Been bushwhacked because we had two of them. We had double your pleasure. And, you know, he is articulate, but he's a nasty man. In a way, I think, Pretzel Dan, I think he's more likable, if he's likable at all. You know, Jeb is a different horse of a different, you know.
Well, he's supposed to be the smart one, but I still don't think that's any recommendation one either.
Yeah, but he did a lot of stuff down here, and he didn't care what nobody said. They had a march on when he was giving his first inaugural speech. They had a march on because he was wanting to do away with what is it that gives people an opportunity that haven't had an opportunity before that so many people are against?
Affirmative action.
Yeah. And he did it. And people were marching, and there were a ton of them. I mean, there were a lot of people, and he did not pay them any mind. And he was... I think that was what it was about. The reporters went in and he told them to get their you-know-what out of there. And he claimed he was talking about the reporters because it was on the news. I happened to see, you know, they would have, some of the news would have something, but then you wouldn't see it anymore. But this man, you know, I've heard people say, oh, well, he's articulate, he's smart. But if you read the history of him, he's just like the others. Just like the pretzel did. He's gotten in all these businesses with other people's money, just like the thing of is it the AIG? That he and his other cousin were involved in on the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, they got out of that. But see, they don't put any money in anything, and they lose money. Everything they do, it turns to dust. And they come out with a whole bunch of money, and everybody else loses. And I don't,
it's funny how it works, isn't it? Funny how it works that way, isn't it?
So if you study anything about them, him and President, they're both of them, that's the way it is, and then the other, you know. And of course, you know, one of his brothers is, gets all the money for, No Child Left Behind test, you know. He's making money hand over fist for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, they said the market price, or the, no, they said the fair market value or the appraised price for the mansion that Dim Leader bought in Dallas was $2.4 million, but that he bought it for much higher than that. And it's just with his investment money that, you know, he had and that he set up in the blind trust account back when he first became governor of Texas. And, you know, it's just, you know, what are you going to do? You got a few million laying around. You buy a four-bedroom ranch-style house on a cul-de-sac in Dallas. Yeah, why not? Wonder how they paid for that land in Paraguay, but never mind. Hey, Juanita, it's wonderful talking to you this evening. I'm going to roll on and got a couple other blankers here.
Care.
I hope there's still folks here. Take care. Bye now. And let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, boss, how you doing?
Hey, what's happening, Wayne?
Oh, same old, same old. Is if Ed's still listening, Bobby Thomas Bailey, who is Senator Billy Wayne Bailey's wife, is the executive director of the Raleigh County Community Action Association.
Okay.
A job that I'm sure was arranged by her husband. It cost quite a stir in the beginning because, like, yes, there were some, you know, eminently more qualified people to have the job, but she got it. I know her because, well, they did an addition to a building with state money, and, you know, I had to fight her over paying prevailing wage. So.
It never lets up, does it?
No, it never does. But
that's what you like to see, those liberals out there pinching pennies on the backs of working people.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you know. You know, Billy Wayne has been, well, I know his whole history, and, you know, I'm not going to elaborate too much, but, you know, I mean, he's always been on the public dole some way or another, and, you know, that's, to be honest with you, I mean, when I found out that he was running for Secretary of State, I was convinced that he was doing crack or something, because... I mean, you know, I'm sorry, a state, you know, Wyoming County is one thing. Statewide office is a whole different trip. And, you know, he didn't have a snowball's chance in hell of getting it. And I wondered, you know, why would he give up? I mean, that Senate seat was his, you know, for as long as he wanted it.
Yeah.
And I wondered how he was going to make a living after that. Now, I'm not aware of what Ed was talking about with this marshal's job.
Yeah, that was new to me, too. But, I, you know, Ed usually comes with, Ed always comes with solid information.
To call and find out what he's doing and stuff. But as far as the CIA, Podesta, when...
Leon Panetta.
Panetta?
Yeah.
Okay. When I found out that Jay Rockefeller and Dianne Feinstein were upset about it, I knew he was my man.
Well, see, I hate it when I make decisions like that, Wayne, but I kind of had the same thing go through me. Well, you know,
well,
if you're against them.
I mean, those two, my God.
Well, I mean, I got the list right here. Thought Tom Ridge was hunky-dory. Thought Michael Chertoff was hunky-dory. Thought Don Rumsfeld was just the neatest thing since sliced bread.
Well, and wasn't it, I mean, if it wasn't for the two of them, McKaysey would have went down. Is that who it was?
Rockefeller voted against McKaysey and Porter Goss.
Okay, well, who was it? Was it Robert? It was some significant appointment that those two went to the, you know, the two of them really, you know, fought to get him in there. I can't think of which one it was, but...
But I love this idea that he's puzzled by the selection of Leon Panetta. He's puzzled, Wayne. He's puzzled.
Yeah, well, you know, I told him down in Hinton I was puzzled over his vote for the Military Commissions Act. That's the one that, you know,
yeah,
that
he sort
was
of
willing to give up habeas corpus.
Yeah, who needs it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I don't think that's, you know, I think that's a wise choice of Obama's for CIA.
Well, everything I've read said that Obama was primarily interested or insistent that whoever be named director of Central Intelligence be untainted by the torture. Literally not have blood on his hands.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I read, too, and I think that's a wise decision. Yeah. And
because there's nobody in the CIA right now who's clean.
Well, no, and, you know, how could... I mean, it amazes me how anyone could criticize anybody that Obama is nominating with the incompetent bunch of people that have run this country for the last 8 years. And the appointments that Bush made.
And, yeah, I mean, that's not to say that there aren't misgivings. I have real misgivings about Ken Salazar. But would Ken Salazar be better than what we've already got? Yeah. The only problem is that that's a fairly low standard at this point.
Well, exactly. But, you know, I think that a lot of this also involves the person at the top. And what kind of standards that they demand and that they set. And, you know, and by leading by example. You know, and I think that people take a cue from that.
Yeah, these aren't a lot of little independent mini-presidents.
No, they're not. No, they're not. And, you know, well, I just, you know. And, you know, I mean, I feel the same way with Ed. I mean, I get a little, you know, let's give the guy a shot. You know, and, you know, I don't know if I talked about it on the show before or not, but, you know, I realized that in the very beginning, and you have to really, you know, as hard as I work for Obama and as glad as I am that he made it and everything, I also realize no one's going to get everything they want. No one. You know, you're not going to get everything. But, you know, how the hell could it be any worse than what we've been through in the last 8 years?
Well, and that's my feeling exactly. And, you know, the right wing is getting ready to have, you know, I think whenever it says right wing hissy, it ought to have that little R in the circle, you know, registered trademark. There's another right wing hissy on the way over another Obama nominee, a fellow by the name of Thomas Perelli. I don't know if you've heard about this guy.
What's he nominated?
Well, he's going to be number 3 at Justice, which is, you know, pretty well up there.
Right.
And Thomas Perelli just happened to represent as a lawyer. He represented the Michael Schiavo side of the Michael Schiavo, Terry Schiavo thing, which I'm sure you remember disgustingly.
Yes, I do.
Well, he was part of the legal team that argued that the woman should be mercifully allowed to die.
Sounds like a good man to me.
So here we come with the Traditional Values Coalition, Wayne, and some awful woman by the name of Andrea Lafferty, and she says, he's just another death peddler Obama has added to his list of nominees, this Piranha Perelli. Don't you love him?
Death peddler?
Death peddler.
What do they call George Bush?
Oh, the God's best friend.
Oh, that's right. It's okay. It's just right.
Yeah, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican.
The, Senator Weeks explained to you on the show that, you know, it's only their responsibility to get them born.
Right. After they're born, they're not responsible.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And we hope they live to be at least 17 or 18 so we could send them off and abort them in some damn war somewhere.
There you go. You figured it out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're all up in arms about Thomas Perelli, another guy, Tom McCluskey, at the Family Research Council. That's the guy that has Tony Perkins for the head of it. And Tony Perkins is the guy who bought his direct mail list from David Duke. Remember David Duke, Klansman?
Right.
Yeah, that organization. Vice President for Government Affairs at Family Research Council, Tom McClessing, says, having Mr. Pirelli at the department means pro-life causes would have a tougher time winning those debates. God.
It's a bitch when you lose, you know.
It kind of sucks a little, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we've been putting up with it for 8 years.
We've been in the wilderness. We know we know every bush in the wilderness.
And, it certainly isn't going to be, easy for us. I mean, you know, we still have Pelosi and Harry Reid.
Harry Reid.
I mean, my God, what a disgusting human being he is. I'm sorry.
Well, let's review for a moment, Wayne, since you brought the topic up.
God.
It upsets
me. You know, I wish we didn't have to talk about it.
I know. It'd be ever so much easier just to open up a beer and say to hell with it.
Well, we got one of those open.
Yeah, now we're moving into taunting.
I'm sorry, man. You have responsibility. I don't.
I do. I know. Your work day's over. Mine's in the middle of it.
That's it.
But anyway, just for the purposes of reviewing, tell me if I've got anything wrong here. The United States Senate under Harry Reid wouldn't do anything about Harriet Myers telling him to go piss up a rope and not showing up to a subpoena. Am I right so far?
You're right.
And they wouldn't do anything about Josh Bolton not answering a subpoena and telling them to up a rope again. Right so far?
Uh-huh.
But Harry Reid won't seat Mr. Burris.
Right. Well, there's, you know.
Because the honor of the Senate is at stake.
Yeah, exactly. How about Karl Rove?
Well, there's Karl Rove.
Right. He didn't appear also.
But the Burris puts the honor of the Senate at stake.
Yes.
Oh, God.
You know, it's so asinine. Seat the man and be over with it. I mean, they don't have any constitutional ground. I mean, they're wrong. They're wrong. You know, like it or not, you're wrong. You have to seat the guy. Let's move on.
Well, yeah, let's look at it this way. What if Blagojevich had actually sold the seat and made the nomination, but nobody knew about it?
Then there wouldn't be any problem, would there?
No, and they'd seat the guy.
Yes. Yes, they would.
But like I said last night, you know, they call the Senate the world's most exclusive country club.
And that it is.
And at this point, I think we should send Harry Reid a pair of checkered pants, preferably polyester. It reminds me of that great line in Caddyshack where Rodney Dangerfield looks at this awful hat and says, "Ooh, what a hat. If you buy this thing, do you get a bowl of soup with it?"
Right.
But, you know, because they're behaving like checkered pants country club Republicans, these Democrats are. And there's no little bit of irony behind when I consider the fact that the world's most exclusive country club is saying we ain't going to seat the Jew and we're not going to seat the black guy.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Now, Franken, I mean, think of what, you know, yeah, people could think of whatever they want of Al Franken. I mean, he beats the hell out of Norm Coleman. You know.
Yeah, on Al Franken's worst day and Norm Coleman's best.
Exactly. And, you know, Al Franken is an intelligent human being. I mean, you know. And I don't agree with everything, but I don't agree with everything on anybody, for crying out loud. So.
I don't think we have to.
No.
But we have to try to put together enough of a coalition to get some stuff done because we're in a kind of a desperate got to get some stuff done place.
Yeah, and if it is required, if that's one of the rules, I've never been real good at rules anyway, so I will continue not to agree with it.
You anarchist.
Yeah, I am.
But the idea that John Cornyn and Mitch McConnell could look at Harry Reid and say, "Don't you dare seat Al Franken, or we'll show you what. We'll filibuster, by God, we will."
And that's when Harry Reid, well, number one, okay, if you're going to filibuster, you're going to have to. And then, I'll put up with that for a couple hours, and then we're going to change the Senate rules, which is called the nuclear option, and we will go with a simple majority. See you later, Mitch. You know.
But you know, obviously Harry's never sat down to a game of poker. He's never faced a bully. He knows nothing about calling somebody on their BS.
Well, he certainly got bullied by Bill Frisk.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's never been on the standing up to a bully end of things.
Well, no, exactly. He don't know if you punch him in the nose once they go away. That's a grave concern. Do you not realize that you now have 59 senators that call themselves Democrats? That gives you some power. And, for some reason, he doesn't realize that he has that.
Well, yeah, one more insult on injury. Harry Reid seated Joe Lieberman in the Democratic caucus.
There you go.
But he won't seat Burris?
Right. Where were, yeah.
Excuse me?
The honor in that one, Harry. It's rough.
But the thing, though, Wayne, is that there is such serious stuff coming. I mean, we're not talking about little bitty, inconsequential stuff. If Harry doesn't learn to stand up and learn to do it soon, as much as you and I and the rest of the Horn audience want to see it, I have grave fears for the well-being of the Employee Free Choice Act.
No, I do, too.
The right wing's out there. It was on that miserable show of Chris Wallace's on Fox, where he said, it's a card check agreement that'll take away the right to a secret ballot.
Yeah, and Steny Hoyer can't even give the right answers.
It's frustrating sometimes.
Yes, it's extremely frustrating. It's extremely frustrating. The Chamber of Commerce and Manufacturers Association and a whole bunch of other right-wing organizations are ready to spend $200 million-plus to defeat that. And it's all in the hands of Harry Reid.
Yeah, it's Harry and Louise and healthcare all over again.
There you go.
And we're still...
I don't know, maybe... maybe when Obama takes over and so, maybe these guys will grow a set because Obama has, I don't know. I certainly hope so. But, Obama campaigned, very hard for the Employees Free Choice Act. He said it over and over and over again. And we need that very bad, I think that, there's a possibility it'll come down to a compromise. And, people don't understand if 30% of the people involved in that particular campaign demand that they want a secret ballot, then there's a secret ballot.
Just 30%? That's all it takes?
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I don't really have a problem with that. If push came to shove, if that's the only thing that really would hold it up, I would do a compromise. Okay, we'll have a ballot, but it will happen within 7 days.
Yeah, because that's been the thing all along, is that they've used this secret ballot provision, if I understand correctly, as a means by which the management basically keeps anything from ever happening.
Well, that's exactly right, because what they do is prolong the election. When you file for an election, number one, in the construction industry, it's a little different. You can have a lesser percent to file for an election, simply because of the nature of the business, because they're temporary jobs and, you go from one job to the next, and the next job might not be all of the same guys that were on the last job.
Right.
So you can file with a lesser percent, but, you're an idiot to file for an election unless you have minimum 60% of the people that have already signed cards. And if you could have that election within 7 days, chances of you winning are very, very good. if the election doesn't occur for 2 to 3 months, then that gives the, you know, corporation time to have their captive audience meetings and to intimidate people and offer them raises and new trucks and whatever else they do and, you know, threaten to close and the whole nine yards, which is that's, you know, that's how they beat you. But if the, you know, the other, because it's not just the card check, it's also the penalties that go along with it. You know, they're, I mean, the penalties are severe for intimidation and coercion. I mean, they're like up to a $10,000 fine per incident.
Is there anything inside the Employee Free Choice Act? Because you know, as well as I do from the attempt that was made here in this state in the last couple of years, where, you know, we employers will have these two-hour informational meetings that you can't leave. You have to sit there and be browbeaten about a union.
Oh, that's not allowed.
That's just over?
That's over. That's, you know, that's intimidation. That's coercion. You know, and it was simply because the union doesn't have the right to do that. The union can't go in and have 2 hours, you know.
Yeah, so we're talking about a level playing field.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing about the act is that you, you know, once you win the election, that the company and the union will come to an agreement. And if you don't come to an agreement within 90 days, then it goes to arbitration and there will be an agreement. I told you, the way it's set up now, you know, all the law says now is that
negotiate in good faith.
Bargain in good faith. Doesn't say you have to come to an agreement. And, you know, they just mess you around for a year and, you know, it's, you know. So there, I mean, there's room to move on. I mean, I would love the bill to pass just with the card check. Certainly so, but there are, you know, we'll see what happens. It's going to be hard, but we, you know, if we don't have Harry Reid and, you know, the Senate behind us, you know, hell, we're not going to win. But there's already, I believe there's 47 co-sponsors on the Senate side. It's already, the House is no problem. It already passed the House once and it'll pass again. The Senate is the problem. And the last I read, there were 47 Senate co-sponsors. So, to go with the nuclear option, we only need four more.
True.
Which, you know, that's...
And it's a matter of finding them.
Yeah. And I you know, well, I you know, two of those could be Republicans.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Olympia Snow.
Olympia Snow. And there's another one up there in New England.
Susan Collins. They're both from Maine.
Susan Collins, yeah, both from Maine. That's a pretty interesting place. Do you realize there are no Republican members of the House from New England?
None? Zero?
None. None.
Well, I know, if it wasn't for the winters, you know.
Well, believe me, I love well, Vermont, but I got old and couldn't stand the cold anymore.
Well, what did you say? Ten months of freezing cold and two months of bad sledding?
That's it. You know, here, I'm, you know, March, you go, all right, man, here we go, spring's coming, you know. In Vermont, it's March, April, May, and I hope like hell June's nice.
Yeah.
But,
and yet there you have Burlington voted a month or so ago, or listed a month or so ago, as the healthiest, basically mid-sized town in America.
Yep.
And Huntington, the unhealthiest.
Yep.
Both of them in the mountains.
Yep.
Both of them about the same population, about the same demographic age demographic, and yet Huntington has a hot dog festival. Boy, that just blows me away still.
Listen,
and
when you go
Burlington,
Burlington's beautiful. It's right on Lake Champlain.
Right.
I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. College town, you know. Green Mountain Boys, you know, Ethan Allen and all them people.
Right.
home of Bernie Sanders.
True too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm told that it's quite likely that he will be he'll be at that progressive media summit that I go to here in a couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to chatting with him.
You meet Bernie Sanders, and I'm jealous I should be there. I want you to tell him your partner told me that he met you in the Chicken Bone Cafe. Is that true?
We'll write that down, and I'll memorize it and then eat the paper.
Okay.
The Chicken Bone Cafe. Yeah, no, there's not much chance of me forgetting that.
No, well, that's where I met my lovely wife. It's not there anymore, but I'll always have fond memories of it.
The Chicken Bone.
That's where
cafe.
I met Bernie Sanders when he was running for mayor.
Having a sandwich and a beer or something, or.
Oh yeah, I don't know if we did much sandwiching.
Oh, sorry.
For its food.
Yeah, that's where they do the pork chops in a bottle.
Well, I think Wednesday night was chili night. That's as close as they got to food.
Well, I mean, you said
and
cafe, and
you had to consume a lot of beer.
Yeah, make it extra hot to sell more beer.
That was done on purpose. Yeah.
Nice.
It was. It's a great.
Well, I'll track him down specifically with that purpose in mind.
Yeah. See what he has to say. I bet it'll bring a smile to his face.
Well, you know, he's such an ordinary good guy.
That he is.
You know, 50 or 60 of him, and we could get some stuff done.
That's for sure. Some very progressive stuff. Very progressive stuff. Listen, Grandpa is babysitting, and my little charge just woke up.
Oh, how is the little guy?
Oh, he's just beautiful, man. I love him to death. That kid old. You could have the worst day in the world, come home, and that little one gives you a smile, buddy. It's all done.
Everything gets all better.
Everything is fine. Everything is fine. I'm going to tell you, man, he's just absolutely perfect. I mean, I might be prejudiced, but that's the truth. That is the truth.
Yeah, no prejudice involved there. I mean, I know just it was yesterday. I saw my little grandson Jasper sitting up in the middle of the living room floor, and he saw me and he grinned, and for the first time he clapped. And gross motor skills, and it's magic.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Look, he can clap his hands. He's a genius, I tell you.
Yeah, he is. Exactly.
Kid's gonna change the world. And, of course, you know, you see sibling rivalry taken off early because Jasper clapped his hands and we made a big to-do about that. And then, you know, she's about a year older and she turns around and goes, see me?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I can do it too.
Well, the only rivalry I have here, the two dogs and the cat are jealous of him. But, you know, other than that, yeah. We don't have that sibling thing yet. So.
Well, you know, maybe you won't for a while.
Oh, I certainly hope not.
Which might be a cool thing.
It'll be a very cool thing.
I mean, as it is, the ringtone on your cell phone is my three sons anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
Wayne, have a good night and kiss the little fella for us.
Sure will, man.
All right, take care.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
That's the boss man. That's Wayne. And let's roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Reverbo.
Hey, Reverbo. What's happening, brother?
Merry New Year to you and everyone on the horn.
Absolutely. And to you as well.
Well, thank you very much. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't everybody over there, there's a heck of a big rumpus that's been going on in this little tiny spot there on the Mediterranean Ocean.
Yes.
Aren't all those people descended from the same guy?
Yeah, kinda.
Sorta?
A lot.
That's like a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there was a study some several years back. I've mentioned it a couple of times. It was a genetic study of Palestinian people and Israelis. You know, little Q-tip swab in the inside of the cheek, and you know, no pain, nothing. And they just go and start analyzing all the DNA markers. For all intents and purposes, they were the same people. And you want to talk about a study getting disappeared down the memory hole? It was gone like that.
Well, there's that study that says we're all descended from that guy in Africa, and that one, nobody cares for that one either. So.
Well, especially not in the South. Yeah. I'm not.
Yeah.
You're fighting words.
We don't want to let any facts get in the way of, our concepts and principles here.
Or biases and prejudices.
No, there's no need for that. But I was just thinking about this. I mean, I'm not the most educated person when it comes to this whole Middle East business. And I mean, it's just so complicated. When you think of that after World War II, I mean, it's as if there you are living in West Virginia, doing what you do every day, which is checking your possum traps, right?
That's right. What you do. Well, they're humane possum traps.
Of course. And then suddenly they tell you that they're going to just dump a whole bunch of these people from Ohio or maybe from Canada, let's say, just in your lap. And you got to just shove over and make room for them.
Right. And not just move over, but be solicitous and not object to being displaced.
Yeah, pretty much just get with the program.
Yeah, or die.
So that's not, I don't know what they were thinking with that. I mean, I sort of do know what they were thinking because there was that thing called World War II and all those people who were murdered. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just, you can't imagine anything good would come from an idea like that. Maybe they should have done it in West Virginia. Maybe you guys would have been more solicitous than me.
Well, I go and I read BartCop.com every day, because Bart's been doing the liberal progressive blogging thing since God was a baby. And I saw him mentioning either today or yesterday that, if these people love their children more than they love their sacred sand, he said, well, they could all be in Oklahoma and just be as, and nobody'd be blowing them up. And, a long time ago, I put forward the idea of buying the Baja Peninsula from Mexico. Not the Gadsden Purchase kind of buying, but, paying a fair going rate and hiring the Disney. You know how it is with the Disney people. The Disney people do these beautiful recreations. Really, nobody's better. Or maybe one of the Las Vegas hotel concerns could do it because, they build New York City and Venice, Italy, right there on a couple of acres in Vegas.
Frontier land and like...
Right, and so hiring one of these outfits to just rebuild Jerusalem on the Baja Peninsula of Mexico. And one or the other can come there and be as happy as can be. And nobody has to get blown up anymore.
This is a splendid idea, except there's all that arcane... There's all those dusty old books with all those weird words in them.
Right, because that sand isn't as sacred as the other sand.
Now, this gets into kind of the essence of the problem, of course, and I realize I'm singing to the choir here, even though you do claim to still be not quite free of those bonds and chains.
True enough.
But you're making progress. There's no question about it. I did enjoy your AM radio man voice earlier in the show.
Hey, how you doing?
You need to see one of these, and you'd be all set. So I'll have to provide that for you. But you did. You used to have, or you tried out some sound effects. I gave you grief about it too. I'm sorry. I remember this was like 3 or 4 months ago. And
yeah, that was before. That was before my son took away my keyboard.
You immediately can make sound effects, and it's almost like I thought you were just embarrassed at the whole thing. But at any rate, back to this business. I'm not trying to make fun of it over there. It's just incredibly awful, and it's been going on forever. I mean, the world began there, and the world will probably end there when you think about it. They seem to be bent on it.
Yeah, they started it. They get to finish it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's
it's like you and me, we don't get a vote in that.
No, it's a place about the size of Rhode Island. I don't know. But
it's like Rhode Island telling California what to do.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I sympathize with both sides, really. I mean, you can't really, swatting a rocket attack. What is that old expression? Swatting flies with a howitzer or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, people are not, that doesn't go down real well with the world. Well, I guess it depends what part of the world you're talking to. But,
and it depends on whether the information gets out to the world.
True, and it depends if the information is also reliable. Obviously, we've got dead kids, and so we can pretty much go from there. But yeah, you got dead Israelis. I mean, these people have just been whacking away at each other. And here's another great thing. And sure enough, George Bush decided to whack away at him, too, didn't he?
He did that.
Him and his crusade. The born-again Bush Jr. decides to go on a crusade against the Muslim hordes. Didn't he pretty much say that's what he would do? And he's done it, I think.
God told me to strike Saddam, and I did. That's the quote.
That's what he said. So we all got that going for us. Thank you very much, Mr. Bush, for that. Like, they weren't really, you know, riled up enough.
Yeah, what they needed was a good needling.
I mean, I don't know what's the matter with these people. I don't know where they get their PhDs, what they're being taught at, like, Harvard and Yale or these higher institutes of, like, international studies that get us. Oh, that's where all these guys come from, and they decide that Iraq is a good idea or Vietnam's a good idea. Lord.
Well, I know. It kind of makes you think that maybe some of these highfalutin institutions ought to be dismantled, you know, brick by brick.
Look at it. I mean, who are they turning out?
Wasn't kind of Sleazy Rice, wasn't she chancellor of Stanford or some such?
Oh, God. I mean, a friend of mine was joking and said, you know, like LBJ, he would have probably been considered a pretty interesting, pretty damn good president if it wasn't for these knuckleheads from Harvard who gave us Vietnam, who talked him into Vietnam. I mean,
President Kennedy was talking about getting out of Vietnam, LBJ. I mean, you saw what happened to him. What we need to do is escalate because, you know, there's dominoes over there, and we don't want them playing dominoes in Vietnam.
Do you think Vietnam was the last of the, like, you know, most these recent wars have all been, they haven't been about national security at all. Of course, they've just been about resources. But Vietnam had no resources. Do you think they really, really believed that if Vietnam would fall, and I can barely say this with a straight face, that if Vietnam fell, that one day you would be speaking Russian?
You know, that's a really, really good question, Reverbo.
Who can believe that?
That's insane. I mean, you can't. You know, a couple of good hunks of peyote, and you can't believe that.
Well, yeah.
You might believe you're flying through the air, or that it's like Bill Hicks says, you know, that your third eye's been squeegeed clean. But believe that? No. Now, to be fair, Vietnam did have some resources. At one point in time, every tire that rolled out of the Michelin plant in France, and of course this is a long, long time ago, was mostly Vietnamese rubber, because there were rubber plantations.
I don't. Yeah, do you think that impacted the Goodyear Corporation too much?
Not once they got going on the synthetics, you know. But it was important during the Second World War because, again, resource management. It's why the Germans had to be stopped to keep them from getting to they had to be stopped at Ploiesti because of, you know, fuel issues.
Exactly, and it's why the Japanese got so imperialist with their they were pretty much looking for the same thing.
Interestingly, the resource business is also why the Nazis pioneered. Here we go, coal to liquid fuel technology. They invented it.
Really?
Because they couldn't get to the petroleum. See, our real interest in the Middle East, apart from the fetishized, and I think that really is the right word, Reverbo, apart from the fetishized stuff that Western civilization, especially the British and Americans, have done with the Jewish people, our interest in the Middle East really develops at the beginning of the 20th century, ramps up in the First World War, and then we decided that we wanted to play that game too, and we installed the House of Ibn Saud as the ruling house of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula by virtue of a coup we supported in, 1925? And every blessed thing we have done in the region since then has been a huge, howling, disastrous mistake. I mean, it's like where the Middle East was concerned by letting in Britain and the United States and France and so forth, that they literally said, welcome to the asylum. You run it for a while.
Oh,
I mean, we haven't done a, tell me if I'm wrong, Reverbo. We haven't done a single, and I say we, by we I mean the United States and Great Britain, we have not done a single thing right in the Middle East in 100 years. Not one.
No, I think T. E. Lawrence probably wrote about that quite eloquently. We're just strangers in that land as much as we ever were strangers in Southeast Asia. We don't have a clue how they do anything over there, and they sure as hell are not interested in how we want to install anything, how we want to tell them to do anything. I mean,
yeah, and this isn't any kind of a value judgment on their culture. I am who I am, and I don't profess to have a profound understanding of it. I'm sure it has its beauties. All cultures do. But it also has its brutalities. You know, the same people who gave us haiku gave us the Bataan Death March, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You, as a matter of fact, you went into that almost beyond what I could stand about a week ago. Do you remember what?
Yes, I do. And just to be fair, that was tough for me too.
I mean, that's talk about inhumanity to man or to woman.
And start with the babies.
Well,
you've opened that door. Let's close it real quick.
We need to close it, but children are dying as we speak now from shrapnel. And so the door was opened centuries ago, and I just don't know what anybody's going to really do over there. What do they think is going to happen over there? I mean, what do you imagine it'll look like in 10 or 20 or 50 years?
It's going to look exactly like what it looks like now.
The same damn thing.
And it'll be the same damn conversation. That's why I get so frustrated talking about it. But it seems like it has to be somebody. What does Willie Loman say at the end of Death of a Salesman? Attention must be paid. Somebody's got to pay attention to this. And sadly, I hate to even say this, Reverbo, but somebody is going to kill all of somebody else, and then they're going to say, look, we have peace.
Well, now there's the dominoes are going to fall then. I mean, can you really imagine? Well, I just said it, though. I said it 6 minutes ago. The world will end where it began, probably.
And, you know, I got to give it, I don't agree. When Mark Levine comes on and does his Israel can do no wrong shtick, he knows I disagree with him on it. We agree on so many other things, but I disagree with him on this. And he has his reasons for his feelings, and I have mine for mine. But I do tend to agree with him on one part of all of this, and that is it does seem that except for using the Palestinian people as a sort of as flogging creatures for propaganda, the rest of the Arab world screams about it, but nobody wants to do much in the way of helping. You know, Mark is correct insofar as the Egypt did rule that chunk of sand for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Guess what? Egypt doesn't want them. Jordan doesn't want them. Lebanon doesn't want them. Iraq, Syria, forget it. But they are awfully good to sit there and be slaughtered, and make Israel, well, you know, Israel doesn't need any further help making itself look bad. They're doing a very good job of it on their own.
Well, they are.
But to use an entire culture, an entire people, as a propaganda tool, that's monstrous in its own right, isn't it?
Yeah, they really are become, they've just become this symbol. For Well, a symbol for what? I'm looking at it on a map right now because I want to get to Somalia real quick before I hang up.
Sure.
And it is just the tiniest little place. And there you got Lebanon at the top, then you got Syria up there, you got Jordan, and Israel's this tiny little place. Then Saudi Arabia is gigantic, Egypt's gigantic, Iraq is gigantic. But the thing I don't understand is it's like relationships with your wife or your girlfriend or with people. You just, at some point you just go, look, how can we make this work? Because then that's the Willie Loman quote. We really got to make this work. So one thing they got to do, though, is they can't have any of these outside agitators running around in there shooting rockets. That is a problem. Like, there were no outside agitators in Iraq until George Jr., well, until ExxonMobil rented the Marines. Dropped them.
They bought and paid for George Bush, and then they rented the Marines. Right.
Right. But, okay, so, you know, that's how that happened. The Israelis are doing to the Palestinians just what the Nazis and the Russians used to do. I mean, if you had, like, resistance fighters, you know how this went. You had resistance fighters, like, shooting from a church steeple in some little French town or some Polish town. I mean, some German colonel would just say, that's the end of that town.
Go and round up some women and children. We will shoot them in front of the sniper.
Yeah, and raise the town. Bring in the Luftwaffe and the Messerschmitts and raise it. I mean, this kind of crap has been going on for...
It's that thing in 2001, A Space Odyssey, with the monkeys with the bone dancing around the monolith. You'll notice those bones were bloody. Like I said, we started doing this when a bunch of early hominids started beating each other to death with rocks and sticks to see who would get the leavings that the buzzards didn't want of the old dead lion.
Well, when the men hominids decided to do that, the women hominids weren't doing that.
Probably.
The awesome goddess was not doing
that. No. The acolytes of the possum goddess.
No.
We're not part of that process. No. And, you know, I didn't get to it on New Year's Eve, and I wish I had. But one of these days I got to spend New Year's Eve in that little town in North Carolina and watch the lowering of the possum.
I wish they would just go ahead and do a live feed because it just looks like, if you really want to think the end of the world is near, I mean, there it is right there for you. I mean,
but see, there's a marketing problem with that, Reverbo. If you watched New Year's Eve or saw the footage, the ball came down and then it said 2009 Toshiba, 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 Toshiba. I don't know how you hang the product placement from the possum because the possum is going to have to object.
I don't know. Maybe hot Hormel. You got to come up with some
gravy, 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 gravy.
There you go. Oh God. Yeah, I can. Only in the Tennessee, North Carolina border. Real quick, I heard this really interesting story on Hartman, and I don't want to take away from your show. But so he's on there talking about the pirates in Somalia. So I went to the Huffington Post, and I found this story on the net. And I have no proof that any of this is true, but it's really interesting food for thought, especially as it relates to last night. You had a real moving segment on where you live, and then you had that Jackson Brown song after that, and I just really had to stop and just listen to all that. I thought that was great radio, and you're talking about people exploiting situations and doing what they do, just disrespecting just your decency and your rights and manipulating information and just not looking where you're going and just stomping on people with big boots. And I mean, there's happening right there to you. And funny about this, because it kind of, according to this story by Johan Hardy in the London Independent, That's what kind of is happening over in Somalia. And that's what has caused these pirates to take matters into their own hands, since they don't have a navy, they can't defend their own shores, they can't, you know, it's just been a mess over there since when? When have they basically just, like, not had a government?
Shortly before Bill Clinton went into office, roughly.
Yeah, 1990 or something.
Yeah.
So it's just a total disaster over there. Lawless place with no, they have no defenses. And so here's this story about how you got 9 million people teetering on starvation. And it looks to me, according to this guy and the person he interviewed, Ahmedu Old Abdallah, who is the UN envoy to Somalia, says that a whole bunch of the industrialized world has just been basically using Somalia as a dump. And also using them as like a big, huge aquarium to just like fish the hell out of their, out of Somalia's national waters.
Coastal, sure.
Yeah. And so this is what brought on the whole pirate business. And they are talking here about dumping barrels of pollution into the ocean off the coast of Somalia. The citizens suffering like malformed babies. Did you remember this story, everybody?
Yes.
The nausea, the rashes, the malformed babies. We've got, then they said after the tsunami, hundreds and hundreds of leaking barrels of waste, and they talking about nuclear material is now washing up on the shore because, you know, that tidal wave kind of just moved on to the west. And here we are. Let's take a look again over here at the map, and we see there's Somalia, which pretty much, by the way, it's the Horn of Africa.
Yes.
Ha, ha, yeah. Yar, So, and it looks like it's about 1,000 miles of coastline on it. I mean, it's not a small place. So you can conceivably be dumping nuclear waste out there.
Yeah, nobody's watching at all.
Oh, and you can be fishing for the fish in the oceans, you know.
And you pull up one of those Simpsons fish.
Well, you could, or it's just, I don't know, the ocean still hasn't turned against us yet. It's still trying to do its best to just clean up the mess. But at any rate, so this pretty huge bunch of coastline, and now we've got a bunch of people dying from radiation sickness, and then getting used and abused. And this guy from the UN says somebody was actually dumping nuclear material over here. This is a quote. There is also lead and heavy metals such as cadmium and mercury, comma, you name it. Much of it can be traced back to European hospitals and factories. Now get this. Who seem to be passing it on to the Italian mafia to dispose of cheaply. I mean, this story is just...
Holy smokes.
Bizarre. I'll finish this up real quick. Then he says, the guy who wrote it says, when I asked Old Abdallah what European governments were doing about it, he said, nothing. No cleanup, no compensation, no prevention. And suddenly you've got a bunch of Somalian dudes with, you know, getting those Evinrudes tuned up and seeing if they can buy some AKs and saying, enough of this. We're going to go out and raise us a big rumpus out here.
I wouldn't be in the least surprised to find out that that was true.
Well,
I mean, just to turn things back on themselves a little bit, you know, the Israelis are brooding about how, you know, they never drop a bomb, fire a missile, whatever, that it isn't, you know, surgically pinpointed because they're using global positioning satellites to determine where everything is that they want to hit.
Yeah.
So am I to assume that global positioning satellites don't work off the Somali coast?
Evidently, it's some kind of the Bermuda Triangle extends out there somewhere. Yeah, that's we're supposed to be that stupid.
And attack helicopters and F-16s can't run as fast as a Zodiac boat with an Evinrude on the back?
Not those big Evinrudes, man.
Yeah, because those big ones, man, they go.
Oh boy, you better be. Yeah.
And tanker, you know, oil tankers can't outrun that.
No,
something is, pardon the pun, fishy here.
No, they've got about a dozen of them, I guess, and docked. They're treating everybody fairly humanely and feeding them, and there's, you know. But this whole thing just, and I'm not here to corroborate this in any way, but when I read this and heard about this, and then I went and found this, which I will email you the link to if you, because it's definitely fascinating. Especially his business with the mafia. I mean, I'm looking at the map again. Somalia is nowhere near Europe, Bob.
No, not even a little bit.
However, the best place, if you are going to dump a bunch of crap in the ocean when nobody's looking, that's where you go. Because everybody's going to be watching in the Mediterranean. Everybody's going to be watching around Europe. Nobody, evidently, gives a crap about what happens off the coast of Somalia.
Well, you know, forget about it, Jake. It's Africa.
Well, I didn't want to say it.
But it's true. How in the world is that not true?
This is. So these people are like, hey, we're going to defend ourselves here.
And, you know, just to try to be a little bit fair, some of them have that religious insanity going on for them.
They got that.
And that's, you know, that's always highly motivating. You know, it's always good if you can say that some invisible creature told you to do it. It's the ultimate cop out. It's the ultimate defense. Ah, yeah, God told me to. You know, I watched Bill Maher's Religious not too long back, and there's footage in there of one of those insane Texas women saying that the Jesus told her to either drown or stone or otherwise kill her babies. You know, just like what God told Abraham to do to Isaac.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of those kick-the-furniture moments.
You know, adding, it's just like nothing really crystallizes a bad idea like, say, a half a case of cheap malt liquor. And you can also say nothing really crystallizes a bad idea like, oh, I don't know, half a case of Jesus or half a case of...
Half a keg of vengeful God.
There you go.
I've been in positions to know a lot of people who have made a lot of dumb decisions that were dumbly enhanced by Mad Dog 2020.
Oh, it's starting to look like it's doable.
This isn't so crazy.
No, you just walk in there, point the gun at the clerk, and he'll give you the money. Yeah, it's easy.
It's like Gore Vidal wrote so many wonderful books, but one of them was called Creation. And it's a first-person account of a guy who was an emissary in the Persian court, and it's sort of the whole Greece-Persia thing from a different perspective. And he cites, and I don't know if Gore Vidal just made this up or if there was any reality to it, he cites an old Persian proverb that says no decision should be entered into without first getting loaded. And then you only make the decision the next morning. Because if you get loaded and the decision gets, if you get loaded and the idea gets better, odds are by the time you've got a nice headache the next morning, it's not going to be such a good idea anymore. A buddy of mine used to point out that here in West Virginia, 48% of the traffic fatalities are caused by drunk drivers. That means 52% are caused by sober people. Everything has its opposite side. This isn't a DUI conversation or anything like that before I start getting emails. But
that's a real interesting way to look at it. So the best thing to do is look at it when they say in the cold, sober light of day, they mean after a night where you really thought this might have potential. Wait till the morning.
Yeah, wait till the next morning when your head hurts real good. And then the mere smell of food is enough to send you running. And then has to, hey, you know, you still want to do what we were talking about last night? No. No, I don't. That would be crazy.
It doesn't even take a glass of wine, evidently, to decide to just, abuse people in Africa or abuse people in
No, I mean, these are decisions.
I mean, the people anywhere.
These are decisions made by people, Reverbo, who say, well, you know, lips that touch liquor shall never touch mine. My lips? No, my liquor. No, Dick Cheney, George Bush, Don Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, they're all sitting there stone cold sober. But see, that's one of the problems with being a sociopath or a psychopath. You don't need that kind of stuff because you're just naturally evil.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. I don't know if I should be more impressed with these men. They're like buzzing all day long.
Oh, they're high like nobody can contemplate high that's ever had to use a substance to get there. And a variety of substances. Wow, the walls are breathing, man. Look at that. The ceiling's paisley. And the fern's growing before my very eyes.
I read that the human brain can do these things without any artificial means. And yeah, evidently so.
Well, I was flicking across the TV the other night. I don't do it very often, but I hit this thing on PBS talking about the nature of art. And they were, and this art historian scientist guy, that's a technical term, was pointing out that in 20,000-year-old cave paintings in France and in 1,000-year-old rock paintings in California, you've got the same phenomenon, and that is horses and buffaloes and ibexes and so forth, and they've all got spots on them. And they're not animals that occur in nature with spots. And this is why I love science. And, the Republicans stand up in Congress, Reverbo, and they say,
well, the National Science Foundation gave $50,000 for a study of goldfish. Haw, haw, haw. Government needs to get out of the research business and leave that to the private sector. And it's all made such sport of.
Yeah.
But there were neurological studies done on the nature of hallucinations.
And they're eating the same mushrooms.
Eating the same mushrooms. They're smoking the same dope. Whatever it is they're doing, what happens inside the anatomy of the human brain is the first thing that happens on the neural pathways is you start seeing spots. And so, lo and behold, a 20,000-year-old cave painting in Europe has spots on the horse or the buffalo or the whatever, just the same as it has spots on it on a 2,000-year-old rock wall in California.
I love this. And you know what else it goes to show? And really, we ought to just, this is another thing we just ought to get over and move on from. It just, I'm all the way up to the drug war now with this. It just goes to show you the human beings want to get a buzz.
Living things, Reverbo, want to get a buzz. Botanists and zoologists and everything have more or less pointed out, read this years ago, every living creature has something that it ingests to alter its reality.
Why do three-year-old kids, like spin around?
Boom.
They're smiling when they do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
You ever watch the birds getting whacked on the fermented berries?
Yeah, they like that, don't they?
We used to have these berry bushes outside my science classroom when I was in high school. And in the spring, the berries would ripen, and then they'd ferment. And the birds would come from all over, and they'd be sitting there just gorging themselves on these whackberries.
Sweet.
And then they'd get up and go to fly, and we had all these sort of reflective glass windows.
Uh-oh.
And they'd fly into themselves and just knock themselves stupid against the walls of the science room.
Oh, God. You know how many birds kill themselves by flying into windows? Oh, I shouldn't be laughing, but it's a funny story. By the way, the real smart ones who painted the ibexes with the spots, the ones who figured out where those berries and mushrooms were, they ended up being known as medicine men, and they were the ones who controlled the people.
Yes, and okay. And the art was a means of control. Yes, there was a story 2 weeks ago of a dig in Russia or Mongolia or some remote place, and they dug up the world's oldest pot stash.
Damn.
No kidding. And, you know, the scientists thought it was something else. And then they did the spectral analysis, or they did the science guy stuff on it and went, holy crap, it's this guy's stash. And it had all kinds of little figurines around it and, you know, everything you'd want to send to some, you know, you can't let him go to the afterlife without, you know, without a buzz.
There you go.
But it was obviously not for food purposes. It was not for, well, you know, we previously thought this culture only grew hemp for the purpose of making rope. Stupid, stupid science guy.
Stupid science guy. No, and they just made beer to water the spinach.
Right, because, you know, the water was no good. Otherwise, they would have been drinking water. And it's the same, you know, it's the same thing I got in the fundamentalist Baptist church growing up. Well, son, it says wine in the Bible, but let me explain to you. What that word translated as wine is in the original language of the Lord is grape juice. They weren't really drinking wine because wine is of the devil.
Oh, God, the bus is leaving. These people don't have a ticket. That's all I can say.
Now, meanwhile, you know, just simple biology that even an old English major like me can understand. If you grow grapes, there will be, and you're growing them organically, and you're not spraying them anything nasty from Monsanto or anything, or Ortho or Bayer Crop Sciences. You just grow grapes. On the outside skin of that grape, that the exterior grape skin is a host for a little tiny animal that is wild yeast. There is no such thing as a grape hanging on a vine without some wild yeast spores on it. And if you leave the grape alone, the wild yeast spores will consume the sugars, exhale carbon dioxide,
and
alcohol, ETOH, naturally occurring. That's why the miracle at Cana was such a big deal. Because Jesus turned water, he didn't turn water into wine into water, he turned water into wine. And, you know, back then nobody knew it was the yeast. They just knew that if you did A, B, C, D, E, you got wine. And, you know, hence the parables about you can't put new wine in an old skin or old wine in a new skin. I don't fool with wine skins. But apparently, if you do it the wrong way, the wineskin bursts because of the active fermentation still going on.
Indeed.
And then there's old Dom Perignon, a millennium later, who screwed up the batch at the monastery and takes a swig and it's fizzy and he gets whacked out of his mind on it and screams, "I'm drinking stars!" Champagne.
And then later, all those champagne bottles end up getting put on a boat owned by the mafia. And when nobody's looking, they dump that off the coast of Somalia.
Off the coast of Somalia.
I love this. There's a guy that used to do this on public TV. He'd tell you how the invention. You remember this guy? He'd tell you how the invention of like the paintbrush led to the atomic bomb or something like this.
Yeah.
We're doing it right now.
Right. Or, you know, then there's that what Bart Kopp calls that old horse molester, Paul Harvey. And now you know the rest of the story.
Hey, Stu, I'll leave you with this. This is great. It's at the end of this, the story about Somalia and pirates. And it's just exactly what we talk about every night here, or you talk about and we all listen to. But it's really quick. It's good. The story of the 2009 war on piracy was best summarized by another pirate who lived and died in the 4th century B.C. He was captured and brought to, obviously we're going to assume this is a true story for the purposes of this conversation. He was captured and brought to Alexander the Great, who demanded to know what he meant by keeping possession of the sea. The pirate smiled and responded, "What you mean by seizing the whole earth. But because I do it with a petty ship, I'm called a robber. While you, who do it with a great fleet, are called emperor."
Hear, hear.
Cool, huh?
Well, do you know? Well, you may need to get going, but I'll follow up.
Okay.
Well, I'll finish. Okay, then let me give you another one. In 60 BCE or so, Rome had a pirate problem because the Mediterranean, which the Romans like to refer to as Mare Nostrum, our lake, has a lot of islands in it, especially toward the eastern end, over there where the troublesome places, and lots of little coves for pirates to hide. And pirates were seizing, Rome could not feed itself. And this was the days of the Republic. The Senate is still running Rome, and it's running fairly well now that Carthage is out of the way. Some of the traditions are falling by the wayside. Gaius Marius has been, was consul 7 times, which was just unheard of. That was followed by Sulla and his proscriptions. But Rome can't feed itself, so it has to rely on places like Sicily and Egypt to provide its grain. And there were these huge Roman grain barges that traversed the Mediterranean. And pirates began seizing the grain barges. And, of course, so much of this you can just hear a Republican saying this in the Senate. If we don't stop these pirates now, we'll have to fight them on the Tiber. Ever heard that before? If we don't fight them there, we'll have to fight them here?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't original when it was said recently. So, in an extraordinary act of granting extraordinary plenipotentiary powers, the Roman Senate gave proconsul status to a man named Pompey, who became known as Pompeius Magnus. He was an upcountry guy. He wasn't part of the glitterati of Rome. He was a bit of a bumpkin, spoke an off-brand of Latin, and was big and sort of oafish. But he got the job done. And he was given plenary powers to clean up the Mediterranean. And the Roman Senate passed what was their version of the Patriot Act. I guess it would be the Pro Patria Act. And they gave him all the money he could stand and said, go get rid of the terrorists. And he did. But then they extended his jurisdiction inland. And the next thing you know, Pompey's conquered the entire Mediterranean on behalf of Rome.
I can see it was kind of fun to spend all the money you want and start conquering people.
Yeah, and the next thing you know, he's got kings willing a kingdom to Rome. There's all the stuff going on with the Ptolemies in Egypt. And everything bad that happens to Rome later on, whether it's the dictatorship of Julius Caesar or Antony and Cleopatra or any of that foolishness, the rise of the empire as opposed to the republic and the death of the republic, all of that flows out of the Senate's grant to Pompey of the power to get to keep us safe.
Security. Yeah.
So, well, that's hand in glove with the pirate thing with Alexander the Great. It's all a question of perspective. Steal a little and they call you a thief, steal a lot and they make you king.
Yeah, and it also pretty much describes why every civilization with these grandiose plans like Rome and Great Britain and, I don't know, Japan, the United States, are doomed to fail when they do these things.
Empires fall. What goes up must come down, and empires, it's like they're subject to some sort of cultural or socio-political gravity. They come down. And the higher you build them, the further they fall. Now, in response to our conversation about Vietnam a little bit ago, I just heard from Chris, and he said, a friend and Vietnam veteran told me of the large oil reserves off the coast of South Vietnam. Who would have known?
Well, there you go, then. Well, I mean, who would have known that the Tom Kin Gulf incident was a hoax? I mean, I guess I'm just an idiot. I should just assume the worst, like I always do anyway.
you know, that's the beauty of being a pessimist. Most of the time, you're not brokenhearted, and sometimes you're pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I think the truth and comedy come from the pessimistic end of things anyway.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, Reverbo, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I really appreciate your time, and don't be such a stranger.
Well, I'm busy filling out these online job applications with the federal government.
I was going to say, you're not going to work in Nigeria, are you?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Yeah, because I already sent my application off, and I don't want to be competing with you for that job in those oil millions.
Oh, that's you. I see you working. Yeah, sure, sure. No, I'm trying to stay a little closer to home, but who knew that you had to write essay questions, answer essay questions for these jobs that basically are just, like, at the bottom of the barrel? It's like I'm applying to be Secretary of Labor or something. I mean, this is really...
You know, it's such a dehumanizing process, Reverbo. I was actually thinking about this the other day because my mind is just all over the place. And I was thinking about all the job interviews I sat through coming out of college. Got myself a copy of a wonderful little book called Good Jobs for English Majors and Other Smart People. Because everybody's like, oh, you're getting an English degree. You'll never have a job.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I sat through those interviews, and you go in there as a young man, and you're all, you know, nervous and jangled, and you want to make a good impression. And they say things to you like, where do you imagine yourself in 5 years? And what kind of contribution do you believe you could make to our corporate culture? Why do you think we should make you part of our organization?
Yeah, and they're starting you out at $2.05 an hour.
There's that. And I was just, you know, one of these days I'm going to get that time machine. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to catch young Bob and just haul him around the corner and say, listen, here's what they're going to ask you. And here's how you're going to answer. You're going to want to say, well, you know, I certainly wanted to give my best to the organization, and I want to be an upstanding member of society, and I want to be a taxpayer, and blah, 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 blah. Don't do that. You look them in the eye, and you say, no, no. It's not, why should you hire me? It's, why should I work for you? You are bargaining with me for a chunk of my life. What makes you think you're worth it? And it just struck me as having a little bit of profundity to it, Reverbo.
And no one's got the balls to do that in an interview. And you know what? I think I'm going to do it. Except no one's going to care now because I'm going to be 57 years old. It doesn't matter now.
Right. But now you can enjoy it. And
I'm going to start going into the story about how maybe communities should be negotiating with Walmart like this.
No, well, no.
I've heard this story before on a larger scale now.
Yeah. No, there is a story that goes with it, though. I sat down to interview with a group, and they had sent their interview crew because, you know, these guys wouldn't be doing their interviews if they were indispensable inside their organizations. You know what I'm saying? They couldn't spare the. They take these guys and, oh, get out of here. Go do some. Go interview some college kids, for God's sakes. Get out of our hair. So, you know, they're little lower totem pole types who want to come and kick around the peons for a little while and make you feel inadequate.
Human resources weasels.
Yeah, I literally wallpapered a wall one summer with rejection letters.
So I'm generating quite a file full of them.
But I took pride in them and just put up I covered a door in them, a wall in them, because you have to go to these things, and 90% of them you wouldn't work for them if they gave you the offer anyway. But anyway,
I don't anymore. Don't worry, the internet is a wall between you and them. They're only interviewing Albert Einstein for physics jobs and Jackie Stewart for pizza delivery jobs. They're not interviewing you and me.
Jeez, that's great. But I sat down with this guy and you know, you see who you're interviewing with, and one of them was Michael McDonald. That's the guy's name, Michael McDonald.
Okay.
And so he says, I may have told this story before. I probably have. I've told all my stories before. But he looks there. It looks at me in this earnest way and says, "Well, where do you see yourself in 5 years?" And remember, it's Michael McDonald. You are of enough of an age to remember who Michael McDonald was. Doobie Brothers, you know.
No, I was going to guess he's a musician.
Yeah, he was a singer, and he was a background singer before he got the job doing the lead gig for the Doobie Brothers.
Okay.
But where do you find yourself? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I just looked at him and said, "Well, Michael, I'm not sure. There's just such a long way to go. Such a long way to go.
Get out of here.
Such a long way to go." Because in the chorus to Christopher Cross's "Fly Like the Wind," that's Michael McDonald's voice in the background singing, "And I've got such a long way to go, such a long way to go, such a long way to go." I couldn't resist it. The guy didn't get the joke, but when I came out and told my buddies, they were all just like falling apart and their ribs were splitting. And it was like a beautiful little subversive moment in that mandatory process.
Never broke through to this guy's cranium, though, did it?
Oh, no. No, because he was utterly convinced of his own brilliance.
Oh, God. Well, all I can say is I haven't had to look for a job in 30 years, and it's the same damn thing it was when I was like 23. They're looking for someone who has done exactly what they are hiring someone to do. And so I always end up thinking, well, if that's the person you're looking for, they're already working there.
There's that.
Why am I even, this makes no sense.
Well, just take one of them, the one of them that you know is a throwaway, and say, you know, well, we got the question backward here. What we need to find out is why you deserve to have me work for you.
Well, maybe I will do that. You know, and the one that I think...
And it may come, it may be such a daggum shock to the system that they go, whoa!
Well, I'm going to take a little harder look at that Secretary of Education job then and do it on that one.
Commerce is open.
Yeah, well, they're all open. Oh, God. All right. Yeah, well, make it personal. I had a good laugh tonight. This was fun.
This was a blast, Reverbo. I always enjoy it. You take care, brother.
All right, man.
And make proper, make proper obsequies to her divinity. I mean, the possum goddess.
I do every night before I close my eyes.
Amen.
Amen.
Later, Reverbo.
All right.
Make it personal, our buddy Reverbo. Share an email with you from our pal Sophie. I don't care. Subject line, not likely to be satisfied with much coming up, it seems. I don't care, she says, what Dianne Feinstein thinks about anything. She is and always has been a Republican light at best. I think her feathers were ruffled because Obama didn't kiss her ring before making Panetta announcement, and that is at least part of her problem with Panetta. And like you pointed out, look at the appointments she's found totally acceptable. And she reproduces an article at the bottom of the email. She said, this article covers some of my concerns with Panetta. Again, I think my problem with Obama surrounding himself with DLC Dems and Clinton loyalists is that no matter what his original intentions, this lineup isn't going to let him move too far in any direction. I was hoping for someone to go into the CIA and clean it out, but I guess I'd also like to see a lot of dismantling that Cheney and Rumsfeld did as far as new offices and agencies, changing the normal power centers, etc. Most likely, putting the government back to where it was pre-9/11 is not going to occur. You know, it's tough when you reach that conclusion. But it's hard not to reach that conclusion. But I think they really need a hard-nosed intelligence professional to accomplish much of anything. Our intelligence agencies are a giant mess. Of course, I had the same reaction with Gates staying on at Pentagon. Would have liked to have seen one of those generals who were forced out early because of their disagreement with Cheney and Bush get in there and get things back on track. Same with Sanjay Gupta. Oh, God, did you see this? Maybe this is just another one of those silly trial balloons that they float out there, that Barack Obama is actually considering Sanjay Gupta as the Surgeon General of the United States. Isn't that just one that makes you bounce your head off, want to bounce your head off the desk? Sanjay Gupta? We don't have time. But she says, same with Gupta. When I saw his name, I couldn't believe it. But again, I set most of what I'd like to see happen in this country on a Kucinich mindset, with concern for all Americans, not just keeping the corporations and top-of-the-pile folks content. More jobs in America, labor unions, decent wages, a good working relationship with the rest of the world, and on and on. But I think what we see for Democratic leadership in Harry and Nancy is going to continue to be the norm. Norm! Don't rock the boat. Don't be a true opposition force to the Republicans. Same old frustration with not much progress at all. There's no going back at this point. We'll have to just shut up, sit back, and watch what unfolds. Lots of other things to keep me riled up, Sophie says. I'm reading more and more in the last few days on how Hamas is sneaky the way they launch little attacks on Israel from heavily populated areas, leaving Israel with little choice but to attack these Hamas strongholds, unfortunately killing civilians in the process. Very, very disturbing. And Lord, isn't it? Then from our buddy William, is it just me or doesn't it appear to be some sort of D.C. inside fix when Pelosi's still in control of Congress, even though they failed to do one thing in their last 2 years? And if I recall, they did run on ending the Iraq occupation. I really don't get the impression of change at all. I don't feel the hope, and I continue to see companies closing, yet I heard John Boehner talking about issues we already know about as if this is news or some grand awakening. Reaching across the aisle? Then I hear Negroponte opened a multi-million-dollar embassy in the Green Zone, which seemed to be shot right under the radar. One has to wonder what this embassy is all about. Well, this is the, you know, this is the multi-billion-dollar embassy in the Green Zone. It's got its own little mall in it, so that nobody who works there ever has to go outside and actually acknowledge that they're stuck in Iraq. It's a boondoggle. It's going to be trouble. And eventually it'll be somebody's summer palace. Although it's probably, since we built it in the middle of Baghdad, you can bet your last nickel it's as ugly as homemade snot. Well, that was a nasty ew. But you know, it's probably some squat, blast-proof concrete building. About as unlovely as a building can be in the middle of a place that used to be lovely. Yeah, I knew there was, yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. Sanjay Gupta, the guy who told Michael Moore that everything he did said in Sicko was wrong. Sanjay Gupta, great big tarted up whore for Big Pharma. That Sanjay Gupta. What you need, boy, is a pill. Sheesh. Wonder what, you know, Sanjay Gupta would probably go to some place like Prenter, West Virginia, and say, you know, these people don't have a water problem. They need a pill. Brought to you by Carl's Jr. I can't fathom the idea that we would take a talking head, the brainless, soulless TV personality and call him Surgeon General. Are there no good doctors left in the United States? I mean, none? I mean, it's just like Rick Warren with the invocation. Bless his heart, Michael Newdow is trying to file a suit to make sure that God gets dragged back out of the inauguration. I wish he could be successful at it. The Pharisees pray loudly in their street, in the street, and they already have their reward. Remember, that wasn't said with approval in that little book that those fundies are so fond of. But yeah, it's Rick Warren all over again. Is there not one decent minister in America that could be brought to that shindig that isn't Rick Warren? Is there not one competent doctor suited to sit as Surgeon General of the United States who isn't some paid flack from a network that got millions from the clean coal thugs? Not one doctor? Not one? Nowhere? No how? No way? None? That just beats the stuffing out of me. And by the way, we got to have a giggle for the end of the program. This has all been so incredibly heavy. But we got to giggle. Got to laugh once in a while. You remember when we pointed out that the American Family Association had its computers programmed to remove the word gay and replace it with homosexual so that that world-class sprinter, Tyson Gay, in the American Family Association headline said, Tyson homosexual wins race. Remember that? Remember how we all laughed and thought it was just silly and stupid? Dumb old fundies, look at them. We don't have to make fun of them. They make a joke of themselves every day. Don't look now, but they're winning. Apparently, if you go and send a New York Times article via, I guess, SIM text messaging, if you send somebody a text message of a New York Times article and you put the word gay in the title, like, you know, gay marriage, gay rights, Proposition 8 overturns gay constitutional rights, well, that kind of thing. Well, the New York Times computer program, shades of the American Family Association, I tell you, eliminates the word gay and replaces it in your text message with the word beep. No, really. The New York Times. The nation's paper of record. That New York Times. The old gray lady. The New York Times that once published the Pentagon Papers and actually did something on the order of public service. The New York Times that can't be bothered to mention the ongoing genocide in progress in Gaza. That New York Times. They got no time to opine against slaughter, but they've had time somewhere along the way to make sure that some IT guy sets up their text messaging program so it turns the word gay into beep. The three examples that I am looking at here, an article from New York, from the New York Times, I think it was an op-ed column by Frank Rich, and the title of it was, "You're Likeable Enough, Beep People." It was, "You're Likeable Enough, Gay People." "You're likable enough, beep people," and then the link. Or there's a New York Times article, "In New Jersey, push for beep marriage meets election considerations," and the link. Or how about "Family Response, Key to Health of Beep Youth." Beep youth! Jesus, it's like something out of My Cousin Vinny. These beep youths!
What did you say, counselor?
These beep youths!
Do you mean gay youths, counselor?
Yeah, that's what I said, beep youths.
Please, giggle at that. It's gotta be, it's funny, it is. It's pathetic and it's funny. It's pathetic and ignorant and funny. It's pathetic and ignorant and stupid and funny.
Tyson Beep wins 400 meters. Anybody, I don't know how, what is this text messaging of which I am so often hearing? I don't do the texting thing. Somebody report back to me, would you? Go and find Tyson Gay and the article from the Olympics or whatever it was where he won the sprint. And then text it to someone and see if it shows up Tyson Beep in the text message. Do that. I'm burning with curiosity. Beep. An entire segment of our population has been reduced to a sound effect in a Warner Brothers Roadrunner cartoon by the New York Times. Does that mean we have to sort of retrofit all this stuff? Does that mean that the Roadrunner hops up in the air and is actually saying gay, gay? Beep, beep. Help me. Well, thank God the show is mercifully over for the evening. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. And I appreciate your time. And I appreciate the conversations, the emails, everything. Hope you'll join us tomorrow evening for a prayer meeting. My condolences go out to our chat room den mother and all-around great gal, Sue, ELO. And my condolences go out also to Guy James. Sorry about what happened at the Fiasco Bowl last night. I was rooting for Ohio State. And for that, you know, please accept my... I just can't... Oh, the Big 12. Just... Bleh. But... Sorry it worked out the way it did. I think Jim Tressel's finally going to have to spend some off-season time figuring out that there empty backfield spread offense that he keeps seeing and keeps winding up on the wrong end of. But I was there. I was hollering my head off for the Buckeyes. And I really thought it was going to work out there for a few minutes. But that's okay. You got two or three more years of Terrell Pryor, and I have a feeling he's going to make somebody's life miserable. A lot of defensive coordinators' lives miserable. So anyway, thanks everybody. Thanks to those of you who contribute via hitting the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com or your snail mail contributions to Keeping the Horn on the Air to Head On 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Thank you. Thank you to Ben Birch, Peter Godbold, John Fox, Sue, our bloggers, our news ninjas. It's an amazing little group we have put together here. Thanks to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Stand shoulder to shoulder with them as we fight to save our future from the depredations, all of which run downstream from poisonous mountaintop removal coal. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Happy New Year, by the way. I hope we all have a much brighter and better 2009 than we had a 2008. Coming January 20th, of course, we have a new president, and already in Congress, we have a new Congress that is just being sworn in, a few miles away from where we speak. But the nation is not focused, I take that back. Maybe some of the nation is focused on the situation in Congress, but I think much of the nation, at least much of the news media, is focused on the other side of the globe, on what's going on in Gaza. And as we watch these sickening pictures of victims in hospitals, people suffering, I do think it is important to go once again through that complex history, because I hear all kinds of simplistic explanations for what is, let's face it, a very difficult and intractable problem. One thing for sure, though, Hamas has few defenders. Not only has the United States and the European Union declared Hamas responsible for the war and made sure that they are sanctioned as a terrorist organization. But even Arab countries, countries like Egypt and Jordan, indeed virtually every country except Iran and Syria, who is Iran's puppet state, are opposing Hamas. It doesn't do any good. One of the things that Hamas's attack has done, of course, is lead to civilian casualties. And I can't help but note that there is nothing Hamas wants more than civilian casualties. And for that reason, if that reason alone, I think it's clear that Israel is doing its best to avoid those casualties. Now, it's virtually impossible to avoid civilian casualties in wartime. Still, the record is, well, you could call it grim or you could call it optimistic. It's grim in that as many as 100 civilians, it appears, have been killed. But in a record where more than 400 Hamas terrorists, Hamas fighters, have been captured or killed themselves. So Israel has about an 80% kill ratio. I mean, on one side, I could say that's favorable compared to the United States. In the Iraq War, the lower estimates are that 80 to 90,000 civilians have died. Many estimates suggest it's in the hundreds of thousands, and indeed one estimate suggests it's more than a million. And I don't think anyone claims that four times that many terrorists have been killed. But whether you think that Israel is doing it for humanitarian reasons, or whether you think that Israel is doing it for the cold, calculating reason that avoiding civilian casualties allows Israel to pursue its self-defense against Hamas, I think there can be no doubt that Israel is trying its best to avoid civilian casualties. Hamas, of course, is making that as difficult as possible, sticking arms caps.